the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
So welcome to episode 22 of the Women's Football Podcast. I am pleased to say I am now back in the UK after my little gallivant off to Seattle, a great place I have to say, and I was treated to some fantastic weather and hospitality. Unfortunately, I did do a little bit of recording with a guest presenter in Seattle, but unfortunately due to some technical issues, I've had to call in a regular on the show, but due to the fact she's a regular, she knows me better than anyone. And I'm delighted to have by my side Sarah Gerkey. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm a little bit jet lagged. I'm not going to lie. We're recording this a few hours after I've landed in the UK, but needs must. And I'm delighted to have you on board. I've got, obviously, from my time in Seattle, a few interviews that I think listeners will be pleased with. I'm hoping so anyway. We've got Sid LaRue and Megan Rapinoe in a double interview, with Megan playing a little bit of a role as a reporter, and a little bit later on I have a chat with the Brits out in Seattle, Laura Harvey, Kim Little and Jess Fishlock. But I think to start with, after the break, we're going to have a little chat about the news that came out of the US Women's National Team and US Soccer with the appointment of Jill Ellis. So we will talk about that after this.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at shekicks.net. And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
TheSoccerDesk.com. So as I said before the break, the US Soccer announced in the last few days that Jill Ellis would be taking over as Tom Samani's permanent replacement. Obviously, being out in America, I obviously caught a little bit more of the news than I normally would and was able to sit in on the same conference call as Sarah. Sarah, I guess my question first off would be, what did we make of that conference call with Sunil Gulati and Jill Ellis, and what's the reaction of the American media about her appointment?
I mean, I don't think it was terribly surprising. It was pretty public that they were looking between two candidates, which was Jill Ellis and then Tony Gustafson. So from that perspective, you know, it's fairly straightforward. I think what was fairly interesting is toward the end of the call, a reporter, I believe from Fox, perhaps, asked if Jill was considering assistant coaches, and I think he actually specifically asked about Tony. And rather than let Jill respond to the question, Sunil kind of stepped in and said that that wasn't a fair question and that she would have complete freedom to choose her assistant coach. So I thought it was curious that he chose to step in at that point rather than let Jill answer that question, you know, since she will be choosing her assistant coach. So I feel like maybe we could be in for a surprise, and maybe it wasn't a decision between Jill Ellis and Tony Gustafson. Maybe Tony Gustafson is part of what will be, you know, the coaching team that will take the squad forward toward the 2015 World Cup.
It's interesting that Tony Gustafson's name has been mentioned. I think they mentioned in the call that they interviewed three candidates. Who that third candidate was, I'm not too sure. Possibly Tony DiCicco may have been linked with it, with maybe some college coaches that maybe went for it. I think what's interesting for me, obviously, Tony has been the manager of a club over the last however many years at Tirasso. How easy is it going to be for him going back to being a number two?
I think that in some situations between a head coach and assistant coach, it's a little bit unclear what the division of responsibilities are. So given that he's been so successful in the Damallsvenskan with Tirasso, and that he had a role in Pia's 2012 Olympic gold winning team, I think that, you know, what he's in charge of and what level of responsibility he has may be different than, you know, maybe a traditional assistant coach. So I think it's always hard to judge, you know, where that division of responsibility lies. But to have a coach of that caliber be a part of the staff, you know, it would be talent wasted if he was just given, you know, minor responsibilities. So it'll be interesting to see what active role he takes, if he is affiliated with the program at all.
Did you get the impression from the call with Gulati that they are only looking initially at the short term? Very often when a new coach is employed, they talk about the upcoming years, i.e. we've got the World Cup next year, which is obviously the imminent tournament that the US will be looking to qualify for and perform well in. But beyond that, you've got the Olympic Games. Now, there was no mention of that in the call. The impression that I got is that Jill Ellis could well be maybe a short-term option until after the World Cup, and then maybe they will look at moving her into a different position and maybe getting someone in a little bit more long-term. I don't know what your view was on it.
I think it was less about Jill Ellis being the short-term view and more about the focus of the program or the goal of the program being more short-term, which is that, you know, the ultimate success, the only goal they seem to be speaking about is winning the 2015 World Cup in Canada. And she actually did a sit-down interview on Fox later that evening, her first in-person TV interview, and she had admitted that anything less than winning the World Cup would not be considered a success. So I think it's less about her necessarily having any sort of time frame, more about that their entire focus is on that 2015 World Cup.
Well, obviously it was announced this week as well that qualification games that were initially going to take place in Mexico will now take place in the US. I'm sure there was no doubt anyway that the US will qualify, but that's a massive advantage for the US now, isn't it, having the qualification on home soil?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily an advantage, because the World Cup's not going to be on home soil, so why wouldn't you want the experience of being in a foreign country and having to, you know, play opponents abroad? So from the perspective of them maybe winning by a few more goals in a relatively weak CONCACAF division or qualifying tournament that's not even going to include Canada, yeah, it's to their advantage. But if you think about the long-term view of how are they preparing for this tournament, I think it would have been better for them to play in Mexico. So from that perspective, I actually think it's disappointing from maybe an experience perspective. I think it's a big boost for fans and for people who like to, you know, attend the qualifying tournament. But from a team perspective, I don't necessarily see it as an advantage.
It's a very fair point, Sarah, a very fair point indeed. Well, while I was in Seattle, I did manage to catch up with a couple of members of the US Women's National Team, and I did pose the question about Jill Ellis. So I will now introduce to you, with a slight twist, Sydney Leroux and Megan Rapinoe. Okay, so for this part of the show, we're going to do things a little bit differently. People will be used to hearing me asking questions and will probably be bored of it by now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find one of the Seattle Reign members of the squad to take on the role of reporter. And who better than someone who's been on the show before than Megan Rapinoe? And joining Megan is Seattle's forward, Sydney Leroux, still relatively new to the club. So they're going to have a chat. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Pino. So take it away, my friend.
Welcome, Sydney. First question is, you didn't get the opportunity last year to do this, but what's it like to play with the most beautiful girl in the league?
Well, I love playing. Like, I love being able to play, you know.
That's me, Megan, by the way.
Myself on the ball. Being me, being the one.
You're not. Okay, what is the biggest difference from this year to last year? I mean, I know there's a lot, whole different team, everything, but just sort of a quick fire, yeah. Couple things.
I mean, I feel like with the Reign, everyone's capable of scoring goals. So I feel like it's not so, like, I don't have so much on my shoulders because I feel like we've been able to get it done. Whereas if I feel like we were losing, then it would have been, I would feel more more pressure to score. So it's a nice feeling.
What's your favorite part about being in Seattle?
Being so close to home. Sandy, my mom, she's only an hour and a half away, and then I love the city. I've lived here before, so I love the Northwest, so yeah.
How is the old cobblestone streets doing with your heels?
I haven't had any issues because no one really wears heels here except me, so I've actually had to tone it down a little bit, and now I just wear like little booties.
Oh, yeah, little booties, you're gonna get your flat game going.
Yeah.
Okay, what's it been like to play with another blonde in the midfield? Not me. I am jealous, but I'll try to tone it down. Tell me what you think of those two, Kim and Jess.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. They're so technical, and Jess is very soccer smart, and so is Kim. So I think that I've learned a lot just playing with them, for sure.
Going forward, looking to the World Cup, I think this team is going to help you a lot. What are you most excited about having... the chance to play with this team and then going forward and having the World Cup in your motherland?
Yeah, I'm so excited. I think that I've learned a lot as a soccer player, maybe a couple years ago, someone would have just said that I'm fast and that's the only reason why I score goals. But I feel like I've become a true soccer player, able to see passes and to, you know, make things happen rather than just scoring goals. So I think that my teammates, especially here, have definitely helped me out with that.
Well, thanks for joining the show. Bye.
That's all good. I have one question to add, if you don't mind. Jill Ellis was announced as the US Women's National Team coach on a permanent basis. You've worked with her. What do you make of that appointment, and how hopeful are you that she will help taking you into the World Cup next year?
She first coached me when I was 14, when I just made the switch to the American side. I think she's really helped me as a player and a person, and obviously she coached me at UCLA during college. So we have a very good relationship, and I think that it's going to be awesome, and I'm so excited, and I think that we all are, for sure.
How important do you think it will be that the World Cup qualifiers have been moved from Mexico to the US? How excited are you to be playing in front of your home crowd?
Yeah, we're very excited. I really don't think that it would make a difference. I think that now we have our eyes on the prize and we know what we need to do, and you know, we're done messing around and we're ready to get down to business for sure.
And I guess one of the questions I'd have for you, Pino, bringing you in, how cool would it be to try and get some games played out here on the West Coast? There's a massive following for soccer in Portland and Seattle. I can't remember the last time that the US Women's National Team played over here. I'm sure you'd like to see that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think in my whole time on the national team, we've played in Portland 2 times. We've never played in Seattle. Doesn't seem to make sense to me. It's such a big soccer city here in Seattle and definitely in the Northwest. So hopefully we can get a few games out west. I know all of us on the West Coast love that and our families love that. And I think it's just a great atmosphere. The weather's always great. West Coast, best coast. So hopefully we can get a few out here. But logistically, sometimes it's easier to be on the East Coast because the cities are much closer together. But I think that we could get some games up here and it'd be an awesome atmosphere.
Prior to that, I'll ask you both about the games that you've got coming up in a few weeks against France. Pino, you will be playing against some of your former teammates from Lyon. Sid, first off, how excited are you to play against what's considered to be one of the best teams in European football at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. I think that, you know, just to be challenged, I think that we'll be good. I mean, we've had some hard games. We had Canada and now we have France. So I think we're definitely getting ready, and I'm very excited to play against such a technical and fast with Georges. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it'll be a good test for us.
Abili, Renard, Nasib, all players that you'll know well. How much are you looking forward to coming up against those guys, bearing in mind we're hoping that you're going to be fit for it?
Yeah, it'll be great. I think it'll be a great test for us. It's nice, honestly. You know, sometimes I think we get sort of continent locked here and it's hard to play other teams. So it's nice that they're coming over and get just a totally different look and something that we're going to see, you know, in the latter stages, hopefully, of the World Cup, a team with that kind of quality. So hopefully we can put some good matches together and hopefully I'm fit for it. I'll see basically all my old teammates. Almost every single one of them on that team plays for the French national team. So it would be good to see them, good to catch up with them, and hopefully bring a little bit of insight to the game plan that maybe I wouldn't have before.
Sid, Pino, been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, and good luck for the rest of the season with Seattle and with the US Women's National Team.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So that was Megan Rapinoe and Sydney LaRue. Obviously, I hope people enjoyed Megan's little stint as reporter there. I'd love to get her on again doing that. So, Pino, if you're listening, certainly get your vocal cords warmed up because we'll get the mic over to you at some point. Obviously, they mentioned the France game that takes place in a few weeks, Sarah. That's going to be a good test for the US, isn't it, playing against one of the best teams in Europe?
Yeah, absolutely. They're ranked 4 right now, according to the FIFA Women's World Rankings. They're a very technical team that I think are going to be very tough for different reasons. So the Canada game was obviously a challenge for the U.S. It ended in a draw. And I think that the preparation and what they can expect from France will be entirely different than what Canada brings to the table. So I think that it'll really maybe show something about the U.S. team that you haven't been able to see for a while, in that it's going to test them in different ways, and the results should be very interesting.
I think from a UK perspective and a European perspective, it'll be nice to see France go out there. I think the last team from Europe, and correct me if I'm wrong, to go and visit the U.S. was Germany, and there were some good competitive matches that were played between the two nations. I mean, they're very different styles as well, aren't they? Obviously, that France team is made up largely of players from Lyon, the likes of Louisa Nassib and Camille Abeli. What do you think is going to be the biggest test for the US in terms of what the French team are going to bring to that game?
I think their ability to play the ground on the ball and play the possession style of soccer that the US is supposedly working toward.
As opposed to the ball on the ground, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just an entirely different style than what they've seen recently playing Canada or playing other teams that maybe aren't ranked as highly as the U.S. So I think from a perspective of just extremely tactical players, maybe aren't as physical, for them to have to adjust to that, I think would be very telling about where the U.S. squad is from a preparation perspective.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm really, really looking forward to those two games in June. One thing that does bug me, and we were discussing it just before we came onto the recording, is U.S. soccer scheduling. Now, when those games take place, the NWSL continues on. Now, in England, when there are World Cup qualifiers going on, even when there are friendlies going on, the WSL does not have any fixtures. They keep the calendar free for international fixtures. I just wanted to know what the view was out in the States on NWSL games being played when national team games are being played at the same time. Because for me, those teams are going to be minus some of their top international players, and that can only harm their chances of progressing up the league. And I don't really understand it. For me, it's something that needs to be looked at. I know it's something that's gone on for a while. It's not a new thing in the States, but I just wondered why it is that they do that.
I think the relatively compact NWSL schedule is a part of that. So I think that you kind of don't have any choice but to continue playing with it when the national team players are at camp or playing in games. But to a degree, every team is disadvantaged in the same way. And, you know, when it's a quality friendly that you really see having an impact, I guess, on the national team, it's more understandable and you see value in why it's important for these national team players to be leaving their clubs. But, you know, every friendly is different, right? It's valuable for them to leave their clubs and, you know, go play France because that's one of the top countries in the world. But, you know, as we see maybe who they're playing in August, if they're playing, you know, a lower ranked squad that they're kind of going to blow out of the water, it's like, what did you really learn from that camp and from that game? Was it really worth taking all these players away from their home clubs? So I think it's a bit of a situational issue where, you know, depending on the circumstances, sometimes it's understandable, sometimes it's not.
Okay. Well, I think it's a fair point. I for me, my club is just as important as the country, and I want to see them having the best team available to them. And I know that when internationals take place, that's not always the case. And I agree, the players must play for their national team, but it's the clubs that essentially suffer because their top players are away and they have to play fixtures without those individuals. But let's move on to the NWSL. And I know that from a UK perspective and from your perspective being based near Washington, Jodie Taylor not only bagged her first goals of the season, but she bagged them on her birthday. That was a good moment for her, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was a huge victory for the Spirit over the Flash. There were something like over 4,500 people in the stands. It was absolutely packed. So it was just a great environment all around. And Jodie actually was pretty close to having a hat trick, but I think her second goal was actually an own goal off a Flash player. So it was really exciting to finally see her breakthrough. She had played six games, didn't score any goals, primarily because she wasn't receiving service from her teammates, but the Spirit were really clicking on Saturday. She had loads of service, probably could have maybe had 3-4 goals, but she scored how many she needed to, and the Spirit got an important home victory.
Yeah, looking good and improving all the time, I think. Few results here and there, but I've said it before, I like what Washington are doing. I think Mark Parsons will get it right, and they're clearly, I think it should be fair to say, they've already had a better season than last year, and it's only a few games in. But one of the teams that's surprising me, not really been talked about that much, is Chicago Red Stars. Obviously, they've just recently had a 4-1 win on the road in Boston. Sneaked into second place. Granted, there are teams that have got games in hand, but they're just going about their business pretty quietly, aren't they?
So all due credit to the Red Stars. They've earned every victory that they've had thus far this season, and they should be very impressed with their winning numbers. But I think it's important to look at the teams that where they've racked up their victories. So Chicago's victories, you know, they beat Boston twice. They beat the Dash. You know, so that 9 of their points are coming from teams at the bottom of the table. And so while it's definitely impressive that they've reached second in the table, I do think it's important to kind of look at the run-up of what makes up those points and the fact that, you know, a majority of their points are coming from teams that are really struggling thus far. I don't think necessarily gives a perfect indication of where Chicago is truly at amongst the other 9 teams. So I think it'll be interesting to see Chicago prove that they, you know, they've earned that second place spot and that they are the second best team in the league when they're playing a little bit more solid competition.
Well, you mentioned one of the teams near the bottom, Houston Dash, who did earn their first away draw in the league. I should point out they have a victory on the road, but it was their first draw in their history at FC Kansas City. So congratulations to them, because that is no easy place to go. But speaking of FC KC, they've played 9 games already compared to some of the other teams who've only played 6. And they've already lost a few of those. For me, I saw them in Seattle last week, and they lost the game 3-2, but they still look a team that can threaten. Lauren Holiday was busy in midfield, as always. Amy Rodriguez was absolutely rapid. She didn't have many chances, but she creates a lot of trouble with that pace of hers. But why do you think it is that they've struggled so much this season in terms of the games that they've lost? Because they looked so good last year. Yes, we've talked about the losses of Lauren Sesselman and Desiree Scott, but I can't quite put my finger on why it is that they've struggled to kind of maintain the sort of form that they had last year.
So one major issue is serious problems converting shots and shots on goal into goals. If you look at their statistics, they have a massive number of shots, and they're just not translating into the number of goals that they need to. There were several really clear opportunities for FC KC to, you know, score maybe 3 and 4 last night against the Dash. And, you know, Amy Rodriguez, for example, had a nearly open net. I think she was one-on-one with Erin McLeod, and she just skies it over the net. And it's golden opportunities like that you have to convert if you want to be, you know, in the top 4 in the league and, you know, headed toward the playoffs. So I think that FC Kansas City absolutely has the talent, absolutely has a coach and tactics that can get them there, but they're just missing that final quality. And then in a couple of games, that inability to finish has been compounded by some pretty important defensive lapses. And those, I think, have been most striking, because with their center back, Becky Sauerbrunn, and additionally Leanne Robinson, you would still think they would be fairly strong as a back line. But, you know, they've really broken down at times, and teams have been able to nick some pretty easy goals off of them. So I think once they sort out and become more consistent as a back line, maybe that takes the pressure off their forwards to have to convert as much. But, you know, they need to solve one or the other, or they're not going to find themselves in the playoff this season.
No, agreed. I mean, I thought they were good against Seattle last week. It wasn't the greatest game, but I thought they gave a good account of themselves. Now, we mentioned we've got an interview with some Brits coming up. We've already spoken about Jodie Taylor. One of the Brits I'm concerned about at the moment, Sarah, is Leanne Sanderson, former guest on the show and friend of the show. Boston struggling at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah. Chris from All White Kit actually tweeted an interesting statistic last night after Boston's 4-1 loss to Chicago. He said that Boston is on their way to becoming the second worst defense in pro women's soccer history, allowing something like 2.66 goals per game. So yeah, that's incredibly concerning. And I think honors or dishonors for the worst defense in women's pro soccer history goes to the 2002 New York Power. But yeah, it's been tough to watch Boston games because they always appear to be so far on their back foot and defending that they don't even they generally don't have an opportunity to, you know, create offensive chances of their own. And I think that they have had some trouble experimenting with who to play at center back. And, you know, obviously with the kind of goals that they're letting in, it's not just a problem with that one position. It's team defense. It's how they're holding the midfield together. So, you know, this part of the season was supposed to be kind of where Boston got some points and, you know, set down their marker, because into June and July, they're going to have a 7-game road stretch, which is going to be incredibly challenging. So I think it's going to be a tough season for Boston, but hopefully they'll kind of come together, regroup, and get some points.
I think the only team that we haven't mentioned, with the exception of Seattle, that we're going to leave to last because we do have an interview coming up, is Portland. They obviously had the weekend off, but they narrowly beat the Houston Dash last week. But they had a big favour given to them by their goalkeeper Nadine Angra, didn't they? And that's where the big bucks come in handy, because the penalty save has given them the 3 points, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Nadine Angra is making the big bucks, because there's a salary cap in NWSL, but I think she was an amazing signing. And
the big profile been... then, the big profile. Let's forget money, the big profile, the big name.
Oh, she's been phenomenal. She's, you know, reigning Ballon d'Or winner for a reason. She has been stellar for Portland. It's amazing to see how, you know, calm, cool, and collected she is, even when, you know, maybe her back line lets some through that they shouldn't. But, yeah, she's been absolutely great. And it just came out today from Jeff Kasouf that reinforcements are coming for Portland. Paul Riley predicted that for the June 7th game, they should have Alex Morgan, they should have Vero Paqueta, and then Steph Catley from Australia. So talk about three unbelievable upgrades to put into your starting 11. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Portland integrates having such, you know, important key players back into their lineup, and see if, you know, maybe they can start putting some points on the table and start tracking down the Seattle Reign.
Well, obviously, Vera Paquette, it should be mentioned, will be taking part in the UEFA Women's Champions League final, which takes place this week. Obviously, they play against Wolfsburg in Lisbon, and I will be covering that in the next show after the game has taken place, but sure to be a mouth-watering contest between two very, very strong sides. And obviously, congratulations to Steph Catley and her Australia team, qualified for the World Cup next year through the Asia Cup alongside South Korea, China, and Japan. I think there is still one spot to go at the time of recording that needs to be decided. But I think the only team in the NWSL that we haven't covered, Sarah, is the Seattle Reign. Obviously, they are flying at the moment, and I think rather than us speaking about it, I managed to catch up with Laura Harvey, Jess Fishlock, and Kim Little, the Brits abroad. So here they are talking about all things HP Source and everything else regarding Britain. So in continuing to try and do things a little bit different for this edition of the show, I'm going to have a look at a Brits Abroad feature. So I have coach Laura Harvey and I have midfielders Jess Fishlock and Kim Little with me. So I'll start with Laura. You've got your two star midfielders, or two of your star midfielders, sat next to you. Tell me what has made them so impressive this season and helped shoot you to the top of the league so far.
I think that they both are technically very good, which makes a huge difference in the way that we play. Very dynamic in the way that they move, so the American game suits them a little bit, because you need to have pace and need to be dynamic to be successful in this country. And yeah, I think a little bit of knowledge of the game on top of that helps them, because then they can educate some of the other players on some of the ways that we back home we try and play, which I've always believed that if you could merge the two together, then I think you've got a recipe for success. And I think that, you know, their performances so far have proven that, and proven why we worked hard to bring them both here.
Kim, how different has it been so far? You've been out here a month or two now. How's Laura's methods differing to what you were used to back at Arsenal?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're very similar. I think the game is slightly different here, so that's what changes it, because it's more transitional. You don't maybe hold the ball for as long as what we would have done at Arsenal. But yeah, I've settled in really well. I think I'm pretty lucky with the team that we've got here that it has been that easy to do so, because we've got so many good players. So yeah, settling in extremely well.
I think it was the middle of June that you had to wait for a victory last season, Jess. You're 7-0 so far at the time of recording. Tell me what the atmosphere at the club is like compared to this time last year.
No, you know, I don't think it's that different, to be honest with you. The atmosphere that we've got now compared to what it was last season, as strange as that might sound to other people from the outside, the way that Seattle has always been and the way that the club's always run is it has its principles and its philosophy, and that doesn't change. The difference between this year and last year is we're scoring goals and we're winning the games. And last year, that was something that we just couldn't do. So the camp itself, is it any different because we're winning? No, because as soon as that changes, then maybe we stop doing what we've done all along, and maybe we won't get our results. So the camp is what it is. You know, we work hard, we come to training, and every day we do Laura's sessions and we develop and we learn, and that doesn't change. And you know, we have a laugh, we have fun, and that'll always stay the same.
Kim, did you notice that when you came to the club? You're obviously coming from a club that's been very, very successful in Arsenal. Did you come to a club that appeared to have finished second from bottom in the league last season, or did you come to a club that you think, actually, do you know what, this is a really happy and boisterous bunch and it's going to be a good season ahead of us?
Yeah, you know, I came in, I think, definitely thinking that this season was going to be, you know, a good season. And I think even before it started, I think I definitely believed that we had the players who, you know, who can fight and be at the top of this league and have the potential to win it. So yeah, you know, obviously I think it's different here because there's a lot of more changes every year in the teams. So it almost changed. I think there's maybe half and half, is it, maybe from last year? Whereas back in England, you would maybe change three or four players on a normal season. So no, you know, completely. I think this group of girls are, you know, a great bunch and just really good people. So I think that just makes a good atmosphere to be around.
Having Kim at the club, one player of the month in the first month of the season, it's not much of a surprise, is it?
No, I think the hard thing that to judge prior to the league starting is how quickly the transition for anyone coming into the team, like how quickly it would enable them to get used to, you know, the different surroundings and the different style of play and playing on what the Americans would call turf, what we'd call 3G at home. It's different playing on this every week, and you have to sort of tweak the game slightly to account for that. And I don't think anyone who knows Kim or seen Kim play would doubt that she could come in and do really well in this league. I think it was just a matter of how quickly that would take, and you know, obviously very pleasantly surprised that it took probably 40 minutes for it to happen. So yeah, I think with obviously we knew that the Boston game being the first game was going to be a tough one for everybody, but probably especially for Kim with the fact that she landed the day before and, you know, first game and all that and the intensity around it being the first game and blah blah. But you know, I think the performances over the whatever many games it was, 5 or 6 games it took to get player of the month, I don't think it was a competition really.
I'll ask Jess and Kim to comment on each other. First of all, Jess, what has Kim brought to this side that you didn't necessarily have last season? And I'm not going to say have you been surprised by how quickly she settled, because you'll know all about her from England as much as we do. But what has she brought to the team, and I guess what has she, how has she helped your game maybe in a way?
Yeah, I think me and Kim spoke one time before. I can't remember when it was. Where were we? When we went to walk for the supermarket. Anyway, and I said to her, moving on, I said that it's funny that sometimes you don't appreciate someone's ability until you get to train with them and play with them. Obviously, I've known Kim. I had to play against her many a times. And obviously, she was a great player, but you don't appreciate that until you're able to train and be on the same side of it and realise just actually how good they are. And that's why I got with Kim. You know, I obviously knew she was a great player. There was no denying that, but I didn't realise just how good she was until she's in my side, and she makes my life a lot easier. And what she does is she's turned us into a team where we can keep possession and we can build and we can do that, and Kim can be a huge part of that as well, as much as she wants to be. But when she gets in and when she's on the half turn and when she's in those spaces between the back line and the midfield, she will hurt you. And that's not just by her scoring goals, but she will penetrate and she will assist and she will drag you all over the place. And so she turns us into then a very aggressive team going forward, and that was something that we missed last season. That was something that we just did not have in that area. And arguably for me, she's probably one of the best in the world that does that. So, you know, it's pretty nice to have her in front of me.
Nice words there from Jess. You got the chance to return the compliment now, Kim. You've obviously played against Jess when you were in the WSL with Arsenal. She was in Bristol. You obviously were in the same European qualification group with Scotland and Wales. I know Jess doesn't want to talk about that. But yeah, I mean, for you, what's it been like? You've played against her many times. What's it like to play in the same team?
Yeah, again, like Jess said, we had a discussion about, you know, you, when you play against players, it's a lot different to when you play with them. And you don't appreciate them, I don't think. And I think that's certainly the case, you know, with Jess. I think we've played against her on numerous occasions with Arsenal, and she always caused us a problem. Although the majority of the time we won, she still caused us a problem.
And Chapman was a secret weapon. Chapman was
kicked her in the face.
And Chapman was Laura's secret weapon during those games.
And I think in the last season, you know, Jess at Bristol, she obviously won, you know, Player of the Year, which, you know, shows how good she is. And yeah, I think coming out here, just, you know, she reads the game extremely well, which is something you maybe don't see when you play against them, you know, because you're not really thinking about that, which is nice to play with, because I don't think there's many players in women's football and in men's that have that. Yeah, and just I've never seen someone who can win the ball pure so much, whether it's in the air, and she's not the tallest, and, you know, on the ground, you know, like, she's got a player in front of her who's protecting the ball, but Jess always seems somehow to be able to get, you know, her toe on it, or, you know, to get us, and then that completely turns and helps me, because then I get that ball and that quick turnover, which I can then go do, you know, what I'm good at. And yeah, I think definitely being able to play with someone who can read the game well, and, you know, knows, you know, situations and how they should be resolved, or how we should, you know, try and beat teams, is, you know, definitely one of the main things.
Who did you have to wrestle the ball away for penalty kicks? Obviously, you've come in as a new player, and you've already taken the responsibility of taking PKs, as they would say over here. Who did you have to convince to say that you were the person that should be doing that role?
I didn't convince anyone. I literally got on here, I was probably had sunstroke.
Yeah, sure.
And, I think Sid and Pino were on the pitch, and I just kind of looked at them, and they kind of looked at me, and I was going to take it. So I was like, okay, because I've taken them wherever I've been.
Jess looked at the bench, and I went, and it was as if to ask me what? Who, and I went, Kim.
Yeah, did you say that? I was like, I don't know. So I took it, and, you know, I'm completely comfortable taking them. I know some people aren't. So it wasn't really a... I didn't have to convince anyone, it just kind of happened.
Probably something that we actually did not even consider. Yeah. Because we have so many people that, you know, I mean, Pino would be like, yep, me. Sid is like, I'm taking it. And I think Kim was probably the last person to have actually gone, I'm going to take this. But she was obviously the only person that was ever going to take it. From everyone else's point of view, you know, especially Haas knows it from Arsenal. So it was quite funny, that situation. I looked over, I was like, who? And I knew for a fact it was only going to be Kim, for sure.
I'm interested to know, obviously, you've got a couple of Brits in your team. Your assistant coach is British as well. What's that like for the Americans, Canadians and other nationalities in the team? What's it like for them? What's the banter like? Are you winning the stakes in the banter brigade?
Oh, it's not even a competition. It's not a competition. To be fair, we've actually got a good group of people with banter. Sid brings a style of banter that's very British, I would say. But no, yeah, there's no competition. I mean, I think a lot of them think that we're just a bunch of lunatics, because they don't know what we're saying half the time. And I think when you're British and you then speak to an American, you try and slow down what you're saying and you try and speak quite properly and so they can understand you. But then when we speak collectively as a little group, you can see them looking over as if to say, I have no idea what they're saying to each other. And obviously you don't realise it until you're questioned about it, but we speak quite a lot of slang, especially when you're talking about football, and they're like, they look at you as if to go, we don't know what that means.
Can you give some examples?
God, there's like, I can't actually think of a great one now. There's loads that I say. I mean, I'm terrible for it, but and they just look at me like I'm crazy. But like, even to stupid things like they say cleats instead of boots,
and positions they call outside back,
full back, and centre back instead of centre half. Yeah. And I, there was two things I said I'd never say: cleats and pinnies. No, it's bibs and boots. And they're with it now. They're fine. They get it. They're all right with it. So
it is quite funny because even now when you do your team, you know, your slideshows or whatever, there's like thing at the bottom and this little writing saying OB press high, and I'm sat there thinking, what is OB? I'm like, who's OB? I said to Dave the other day, I was like, who's OB? It's an outside back. I'm like, what? And I'm looking thinking, Harvey has wrote OB. I'm like, this just wouldn't happen. I'm like, stop it. It's full back. It's not outside back.
Yeah.
It's full back. So yeah.
Sounds interesting. I mean, it's for you, Laura. I mean, jokes aside, how much of a pleasure has it been blending Kim into the side, having Jess continuing to improve from last year, and with the additions of people like Bev and Sid and other players, Kendall, that have come in? It must be something that you're thoroughly enjoying. I know that sounds like an obvious statement, but just how much are you enjoying this? I mean, is this comparing to the Arsenal sides that you've managed? Mm-hmm. It's early days, but where do you think this one ranks?
They're really different. I think the most enjoyable part for me at this group is how much we've got left to give and show, and how much potential this group has got to go forward. I don't think we're anywhere near finished article or anywhere near performing to the levels that we could walk away from a game and go, oh, we're really pleased with that. We're not there yet, and that's probably the most pleasing thing. And at Arsenal, it was similar. Like, there was very rarely games we all came off and went, oh, we're really happy with that performance today. But that group was sort of reaching its ceiling a little bit, and we weren't sure what our next sort of challenge was going to be, because, you know, we won the league, we won the FA Cup, we won the league, and Champions League was always that one away.
And the league, and the league cup, and the league, and the cup, and the league, and whatever.
But we wanted to try and, obviously, the aim was always to try and win the Champions League, and we broke the ceiling of getting to the semi-finals 2 years on the trot, which was great, but we couldn't make that extra step. But that was the only thing we hadn't done, but I win the league. And
I can.
It's so loud. But I think here there's so many things that we want to achieve, from, you know, the real basic performance stuff to, you know, bigger, longer term objectives, and that's why this group's so exciting for me, and the fact that we get to do it every day, and, you know, all that goes with that, and in the environment that we get to do it with, the people that we get to do it with, is great.
Kim, you've played against the likes of Lyon and Potsdam and some of the top European sides in the Champions League. You've only been out here a little while, but what's the immediate similarities and differences that you've noticed in this league to playing in the Champions League?
I think the Champions League is, you can't really compare it to a league kind of structure, because, yeah, it's, you know, a completely different competition in that sense, and they don't really have anything like that here, you know, because it's league-based, playoff-based. But yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to play in quarterfinals, semi-finals for the 6 years I was at Arsenal, and yeah, we were never quite good enough to get to the final, and I think that was due to us not being professional and not being able to train, you know, daily and put that first. So to, you know, to come out here and to be able to train, you know, and that's the focus completely, you know, we train at the right times, and then we get, you know, the rest of the day to rest. We get recovery days, you know, and we don't really have other things to worry about. So I think, you know, Lyon were obviously like that Potsdamer professional, but with Arsenal we were never, you know, at the point of professionalism, so it was hard to, you know, compete with them. And that's definitely the difference here. I think that they're very similar to the teams like Lyon and the teams who have won the Champions League, because we get to train every day. And I think that makes, you know, the teams better, but it completely makes individual players, you know, better players as well. Even me being able to train with the ball every day for an hour and a half, I think has already helped me a lot, even though it's only been, what, a month and a half. But just being able to do that every single day has, you know, helped me a lot.
I've watched a couple of the training sessions from the sidelines. There was a moment during some shooting practice and finishing practice there where you, a cross came in and you headed the ball against the post, and there were a couple of players on the sidelines that were having a chuckle about that, because they said Kim doesn't like heading the ball. Is there any truth in that?
She closed her eyes and had her mouth open at that time.
For me, that was a great glance in her.
Hope couldn't move. She thought it was in.
Hope didn't even take it seriously. She was like, I'm not going anywhere because the ball's in the air. Kim's got her eyes shut.
No, I think, like I said, as long as I can control the ball with any other part of my body apart from my head, I will do so. Because then I'm in control of it.
But ultimately, I mean, I've spoken to Laura a couple of times. I've spoken to you, Jess, a couple of times. And you've both said, despite the difficulties that you had last season, it was a happy group, and it was something, you know, it was a club that you enjoyed coming to training. You all worked hard for each other. Looking at how it is now, I mean, it can it get better than this? Because at the moment, it's going pretty damn well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is going really well. Can it get better? I think there's always room for development, and there's always room for, you know, improving whatever way that you are. But the beauty that we've got is we've got, and it's not just us, and it you know, massive amount of it comes from out of the training field. We have an owner that, you know, really does put us first and our environment and our surroundings, and he wants to create a club that is the best in the world, and that's not just on the field, that's off the field as well. And the changes that we've made really suggest that. You know, he's not just going to say these things and then not back it up. He's made this, so this is our home. Some of the stuff that we get off the field is quite ridiculous, to be honest. And they just really do look after us in a way that is so human, if that makes sense. They honestly make you feel that they care, and it's not just about football. It's about you as a human as well. And when you have that, and you're going into work and you have that every single day, and then you get to go on the field and have some fun, and, you know, some serious stuff as well. I mean, sometimes Laura is very serious and she shouts and she throws pens and things like that, but you know, we still learn in a way where we push each other, and that's a good thing as well. But we push each other in the right way, you know, and we ask questions of each other in the right way, because we all want the same thing, and that is to be the best club in the world on and off the field. And I think that is the way we're going. So things look good right now, and they feel great, they do. But, you know, we still want to improve and want to make things better on and off the field, and we have the people that will keep doing that and will make sure that that happens. And that is why Seattle is one of a kind and the place where you want to be right now.
Laura, I'm not going to ask you to say anything controversial, but how sweet was the win in Portland?
I think it was huge win for us, because from a club perspective, I think there's a lot of things that Portland can do and Portland can achieve that we're not in a position to do yet off the field, and last year on the field we got so close to them, but we were so far away from them. And from just that one-off performance, we showed that we've closed the gap, I think, was the biggie for me. That we've closed the gap. They're champions, so they deserve the respect of being champions. And anyone who tells me that going to Portland, who are champions, and getting result isn't a big result, would be kidding you, because it's huge. You go to we were at Arsenal, and when any team came to Arsenal and got a result at Boreham Wood, which didn't happen very often, it was like it was the best result of their life, because it means so much when you play against teams like that and you can get a result in their home venue, and especially at a place like Portland when they've got, you know, 14,000 fans singing for them, and you can quieten that down. It's a great feeling. And I think, you know, to touch on the point about Seattle wanting to be the best club in the world, I think part of the reason why Bill and Therese are so invested in the club is that they want to be able to sort of marginalise that. So part of the bigger and long-term objective is to look at a club like Portland and say, OK, what are they doing that we're not doing to get 14,000 fans? How can we tell if we're better than Leon? Well, we need to play them. So, you know, all those things are things that are in the pipeline that we want to do. We first game of the franchise history was against INAC. Absolutely crazy. But why? Because that's what we want to do. We want to play against the best teams in the world. We want to try and look at the best teams in the world and decide why they've become who they've become, and how we can, you know, steal a few ideas off them to make sure we can be the best we can be too.
One of the questions I wanted to ask is, out of the three of you, who has adopted the best American accent? And out of the American players, who has adopted the best British impression?
Megan Rapinoe definitely has the best British. Yeah. Definitely. She's even got a bit of a Brummy twang to it, which is, and I think that comes from because she's played with Karen Carney.
Did you know she told me the other day she loves cricket?
Really?
Wow. She's a weirdo. I'm not surprised about that with Pino. She's so European, she dresses and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm not surprised with that. But she's definitely got the best British.
Reedy does a good job too, but I think that's just because she loves Harry Potter. So she's like, Potter? Yeah. And she does it really well.
They get the Harry Potter thing, but it's too posh. Like, none of us speak like that. So I think Pino is the closest to probably the way the Brummy. Little bit.
Kim, you've not been out here very long. Have you managed to adopt the American accent yet?
No.
That'd be a no.
No, I don't think I will either. I think Jess's accent's a bit special.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine, you know,
she's
I have
got
some
Welsh.
Welsh, Scouser, Australian.
I only have Scouse when I'm angry. That's how everyone knows I'm angry when I go Scouse.
But the Gavin and Stacey comes out in Jess all the time.
Yeah.
Where are we to?
Where are we going?
The funny thing is a lot of people from the States will be listening to this show. They won't have a clue who Gavin and Stacey are. Or will they? I don't even know if the show's over.
We try to educate them. We do.
Google Nessa.
Yeah.
We try to educate
Google Nessa from Gavin and Stacey.
I was going to say, are there things that you three have tried to kind of encourage the Americans to take up? Any TV programs, any foods or anything like that you've tried to push on them?
We tried to throw HP sauce on them last year. They weren't having any of it. Because often when we have pre-match breakfasts or whatever with the team, that people will order poached eggs or whatever. And, you know, baked beans is a weird one over here. They have it, but they have it with a barbecue rather than, like, on toast. They think we're weird for that. So we were talking about HP sauce and they weren't interested in that.
No. They were like, oh, it's like A1 steak sauce. I was like, no. No. That is incorrect. Yeah. It is not like that.
It was a bit of American there, Jess. I was like, no.
No.
Kim, tried to force anything on? Introduce anything to the players here from Scotland?
From Scotland?
How to be the whitest person in the world, probably. Sun cream and wet towels.
Tanned. I'm getting the American tan.
By the time she goes back, she'll be brown. But yeah. I think for May and June, she'll probably be red. June, best, July and August, I think she'll go brown.
The best thing in the world, I'm telling you, the Boston game, right? Kim was in the changing rooms and honest to God, I thought she was dying. I was like, is anyone aware that Kim's face is like 15 times a different colour? She had wet towels all over her. I was looking outside thinking, I swear to God, it's cloudy. Like, I don't get what's going on right now.
You've gone from one extreme to another there, haven't you? Because Boston was conditions like that, and then you went out to New Jersey and played Sky Blue. I mean, what was that like, Kim, honestly?
Yeah, that was quite like home.
Yeah.
That was, I don't think I've ever played in rain like that. It was constant and freezing the whole game. But we played reasonably well.
Yeah, we did all right.
Concerning how. And Sumi's doing her eyebrows at half time.
Yeah.
I heard about, for people who don't know, fill us in on the story with Kawasumi. Is it true that she was doing her eyebrows at halftime?
Yeah, well, halftime was probably the most surreal I think I've ever been involved in. Because we get in there and our equipment manager had gone and bought everyone hot chocolate, which is random anyway. So everyone was having hot chocolate, which was great. And then all the girls were like trying to find something dry to put on, whether it be like an Under Armour or a different shirt or whatever. And then, so no one's really sat down. So it was like, no one was really concentrating on anything that I was saying. And then I just happened to turn to my right and Sydney LaRue was in fits of laughter, trying to find her phone or a camera or whatever. And then I looked where she was laughing and Kawasumi is stood there, like literally soaking wet, painting her eyebrows on.
Like real life. And everyone just stopped. Not that, like, you've got Harvey standing there going, you know, it's the games that win you championships. This is what we need. Like, you know, remember the Titans crap was coming out of Harvey's mouth at this time when she's got her waterproof arm with her hood up so she's looking like a penguin. I'm like, no one can listen to you right now. And then Sumi kind of just summed it up, really. She was painting on her eyebrows and... She looked around and saw us all looking at her and then just went straight back to do our eyebrows. And we were like, okay, halftime's done. Stop speaking, Laura. We can't really take this seriously.
Do you know what? I think that's a good way to end the interview on a funny story like that. Well, it sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun. And from a perspective of being back in the UK, it's great to follow you guys, albeit at 3 o'clock in the morning on streams and stuff like that. But do genuinely wish you the best for the rest of the season. And Kim, keep scoring the goals. Jess, keep doing what you're doing. And Laura...
Keep drinking orange Fanta
and eating dairy milk and double deckers.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Want more views from those in the game?
Read the blog at
thewfblog.wordpress.com.
So that was Laura Harvey, Jess Fishlock and Kim Little talking seriously and not so seriously for a good period of time. I hope people don't mind the long interview, but I thought it was one of those that should be kept in because there were some good jokes in there as well. So that brings us to the end of this show. I would like to first off thank Sarah for coming in at the 11th hour and rescuing me, because without her, the show would not have gone on. So Sarah, thank you very much. I've also got to thank the players that have appeared, Megan Rapinoe and Sydney LaRue. Big thanks to Seattle Rain as well for accommodating me during my time out on the West Coast. And of course, thanks to Laura, Kim and Jess for throwing in a bit of British banter into the show. Just a few things to rattle off before we leave. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We're on at WFPod. We have a blog, which is thewfblog.wordpress.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, or you can listen to us online from audioboo.com/WFPod. And I think that is it. Or you can email us as well on thewfpod@gmail.com. So that definitely is it. Sarah, once again, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Always a pleasure. And I will catch up with people in a week or two when I get round to getting some sleep and recording the next show. So for now, goodbye.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Shining a light on the women's game.